Well, it happened. I was asked to join a Rings of Power conversation with some Lord of the Rings geeks, and I said yes. October 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining three other podcast hosts to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Now, they all actually talk about Lord of the Rings all the time, and I don't. I'm considered the outsider of the group. I'm not nervous about it at all. I'm totally nervous about it, especially because I haven't even watched it yet. But don't tell them that. I can still watch it. There's still time. This live event will, again, start at 8 p.m. Eastern, and you have to register for the event, and part of the proceeds will be supporting charity. So that's pretty cool. You can register for the live event right now at ringspodcast.com/live. A link is in the description of the podcast today, and also you can find it on Discord in the Captain's Pod channel. I'll pin it to the top. So join Captain's Pod, me, John from Lorehounds, Marilyn from Rings and Rituals, and Aaron from Lore of the Rings, October 11th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern at ringspodcast.com/live to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Okay, bye. There was so much that was happening that was like, fuck yeah!
Captain's Pod, Stardate 1692-74.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief short leap from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she thinks she's the best ambassador in the entire fleet, and I'm here to tell her she is. It's Ambassador Danae!
How is that related to the previous episode?
Rutherford. Rutherford goes to Billups and says,
You think you're the best engineer in the fleet.
Yeah, you're Billups in this situation. I'm Rutherford. It's the only way I could compliment you without getting very uncomfortable.
Right.
And yet, here we are.
You know, I don't think that if I met somebody that was like a Trekkie out in the world.
One day that might happen. Yeah, someday.
And there was some sort of conversation about ambassadorness. Ambassadoring.
Yeah.
I would fail that conversation so hard. So while I appreciate that you're like, I'm the best, I think I'm maybe the best faker.
Well, but that's the beautiful part of ambassadoring. That's all part of diplomacy. Fake it till you make it. You're so good at that. I think that you could absolutely just bullshit your way being the best ambassador, because diplomacy is a lot of bullshit. I'm sure that's what the UN says.
I am a good bullshitter. Yeah. So
first class degree in bullshit.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Let me go eat my soup alone now. Aww.
Do you actually have soup? Don't get it on your mic. Wait.
Does water count as soup?
Yes. This is very thin, flavorless soup.
Just dense with not nutrients.
I would love to. This has made me think. I would love to confuse the computer. By saying, computer, I would like flavorless soup that is cold in a glass and has no flavor, and see if it just gave us water. It's a fun game to play with the replicator. I would be so much fun on a starship.
You would be Boimler.
Yes. And I would like, I did it. I tricked the computer into replicating water by asking for food. Okay, this week, Ambassador, we are finishing season one of Lower Decks.
Dicks!
Yep, dicks. And this week's episode is called No Small Parts. What do you think is going to happen in the season finale other than dicks?
I'm such a troll.
You are.
No small parts. Yep. Oh, this is about team. Oh, there's no small person in the team.
Teamwork just makes the dream work.
Just because you're a lower decker does not mean that you're not an important part of the puzzle.
So what are your predictions for the episode?
Someone's going to die.
Oh, you're going to, interesting, you're going to put a name to that?
No.
Just somebody's going to
die.
I'm
not that confident.
Okay. It's not a finale unless somebody dies, apparently.
Okay, like two people die.
Two people to shit the bed. Okay. Then I want one. If there's two people, I want one name.
Okay. Boimler.
Such bullshit.
And Mariner.
Yeah, okay, good. Well done. I'm going to say nothing else about this episode other than I love it. This is one of those episodes. No. This is one of those episodes I like so much, I don't care if you like it.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes I'm like a little bit, I hope she likes this one. This one is so fun that I'm just like, whatever. I'll just talk for an hour about it, even if you don't enjoy it.
Cool.
With that, we're going to beam into separate holodecks, and we'll rejoin each other in 10 forward. 2 to beam out. Welcome to Turn Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what would you like from the replicator as you fumble that straw into your face?
What was in the bottle that was rolling down the hallway?
A Chateau Picard, I imagine. If I had to guess, it's Chateau Picard. Yeah, yeah, you'll have some of that.
Both a delicious beverage and a weapon of choice.
I will be taking the Spock helmet, which is when Mariner is pulling out all of the weapons from the bulkhead. There's a white helmet with a red siren on top that we've talked about before. I will be taking one of those because it is the best merchandise tie-in that has ever existed. And I think you Googled it for me a couple of years ago and it was like $100. I was like, not going to do that. Overall, thoughts and feelings on the episode. Ambassador, did you like it?
This one was fucking awesome.
Isn't it the best? It's so, so good.
It's so good. Yeah, this has everything that you want a show to have.
Oh, shit.
It has all of the things.
Give us a synopsis. I did it backwards.
Oh, well, to be fair, you really were... So this is, you said this was one of your favorite episodes, but you also said that you didn't care if I didn't like it.
It's very true. Yeah, that's why I wanted to get that question out of the way as quickly
just
as possible.
Get it out of
yeah,
the way.
It's not important.
Yeah, a lot happens in this episode, but I feel like the most important thing is, let's take a look here. Tribbles can be used for personal use. This piece of information changes everything. I just want
to... No, what are you going to do with it? I need to know specifics.
It's personal. Just like it's personal for her. It's she even said that's personal.
Yeah, that's fair. This week there are arguments between Boimler and Mariner as Boimler exposes that she is the daughter of the captain, hilariously. And right when that fight gets annoying, a big space battle happens, which is a lot of fun because the Packlids have they've done what Packlids do and stolen a bunch of ships so that they can make their own ships that are really fun. And they're after some new enterprises and they have to all work together to save the day until the Titan comes along and actually saves the day. So before we get into what we actually loved about the episode, because I think we both had a really good time with it, your prediction this week was that they are going to work together as a team leading back to No Small Parts. And also you predicted that somebody was going to die this week.
I did.
You and sure I was freaking did.
No, but I'm confused because I have seen future episodes.
Yes.
So I both... If I hadn't seen future episodes, I would be really freaking out right now. Like, oh my God, you know, that happened. But now I'm like just confused. I'm missing information between now and then.
Well, this is one of those occasions where I remember us talking about Shax and he's coming back because we mentioned it. I can't remember what episode we covered it in, but we did mention that the way they do it in Lower Decks is that they just bring him back one episode and they don't explain how. And it's supposed to mirror how, like, the Lower Deckers weren't involved in that mission. So they don't know how Shax comes back. Much like a lot of people on the Enterprise may not know how Spock comes back to life. It's just, oh, Spock's back now. I thought he died. Okay, fair enough. So
they just bring him back and they have the A-team having, like, gone on some mission to rescue him.
Yep.
Having thought that he died.
Yep. No explanation at all.
No explanation.
Never
at all.
Explained how he comes back.
Wow.
It's brilliant. Wow. It's so good.
Is it? I don't know.
That. It's late. Yeah, I think obviously it happens in season two because he's in season two. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't remember. Yeah.
No,
well,
I think that's the only season now that you haven't seen. So yeah, it's so fun. I love that.
Well, that's an interesting thing. I was shocked when he died. I'm very, very surprised. Very like mixed emotions, mixed feelings, but like, what a send off.
It's such a great send off. I love it.
Mm-hmm. My other prediction being like, I thought there was going to be a speech though, like something specific, like every person matters. And that didn't happen. So I don't feel like I got the first one, but obviously, my death prediction, I almost didn't say it because it felt like because I know everybody's in future episodes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, I was like, But maybe there's going to be like a side person. And honestly, a lot of people died. I said two. There was a lot.
Oh, an entire ship of people died. All of them. Yeah, all did. Of the, not the Saskia, not the Sasquatch. The Solvang. I could not remember the name of that ship.
The USS Sasquatch.
USS Sasquatch.
Let this be a lesson to everyone to just peel the stickers and enjoy it.
Yeah, just as soon as you get your cell phone, like that's just, it's never going to stay perfect. Just let a Packler destroy it. Right, let's go through some of the stuff you love. Starting with, did you like how Boimler immediately exposes Mariner's parentage? How did that play out for you? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't stay on that drama piece for too long.
Completely agree.
Solving it in the first few minutes is a huge relief, because you just hope that a show doesn't hang its hat on something a little bit too long and it just becomes a trope.
Yeah.
And in this case, they immediately out it to everyone. And then in this episode, they immediately resolve, by the end of the episode, they seem to have resolved a lot of like who Mariner is going to be now, and that she clearly stands up and can lead and can save lives and can make decisions. Like there's so much that happens in this episode.
Oh, it's especially the back half, so much in terms of like the resolution and evolution of Mariner.
It's a really packed episode, and to do like the chef's kiss thing is to me something you save for like really, really good things. I just think about this season as a whole, and I feel like it hit a stride and it didn't stop. And to end on something as epic as this, this was an epic episode of Star Trek for so many reasons. And I think it just does such a great job in that chef's kiss way of going, man, they really had something for everybody, whether you are a new watcher or you're like wherever you come into Star Trek, this had something really fun. And one thing that I don't think we can ever discount is how much fun a battle is to watch. And this is like just juicy, juicy battles with great music and fighting in the hallways. There was so much that was happening that was like, fuck yeah.
And it's kind of like letting them be good as well. Letting them be good at their jobs. Like there's no like tripping over or stumbling, like they're kicking butts. Like it's no funny business now. It's doing the job properly. It's so fun, but you can't, I don't think these moments hit as hard if you don't have them fucking stuff up along the way as well. So when they all pull together and we get like, this is the most TNG episode that we have.
Oh my God.
For that, I didn't actually mean it in a Riker sense, but it genuinely is the most TNG adventure that we have. And it's just, it's so fun to see a Star Trek episode hitting on all cylinders, because at this time we have Discovery, which is very, very different. We don't have Picard yet. We do. We've had season one of Picard, I think. We haven't had Strange New Worlds yet. So this was just like pure joy for me, because I'm like, oh, it's like a real episode, a quote unquote real episode of old school Star Trek. It's so fun.
I think the greatest sin of this episode is me fangirling so hard when Riker shows up that I don't actually know what they said. Like the first 30, I do not know what Riker said or what Deanna was saying, because what Mariner said, because I was squealing.
You were so happy.
This is the part of me where, like, if somebody ever asks if I'm a Trekkie, I think I have to say yes because of how I reacted to seeing Riker.
You squealed.
I was so happy. I was so, so happy. And I love how they animated him as well, because he kind of had this, like, you can do so much with animation. But he had this like kind of like little, like he was just so cockily moving around and all that
exactly
stuff.
Exactly as you'd expect Riker to be when he's finally in command. Like he's always like, you feel like he's toning himself down a little bit in front of Picard, because like Picard is his mentor and he wants to be quite Picard. So when he gets his own ship, his own charisma comes out. He's so fun.
And this really curiosity of like, all I can remember about the interior of the ship is that it seemed very mahogany.
Yes.
You know, Like, he went lounge, and then there was jazz. The fuck was that about? I'm missing it because he plays, but
he plays the trombone. He loves jazz. It's his favorite type of music.
Is that how he actually tells people to warp every time?
I hope so.
God, I hope not.
It's not in the books, but it made me laugh so much. Give me warp in a factor of 5, 6, 7, 8. I love it so much. And you can see Deanna just going, oh, I'm so sick of this. I'm so done. His representation is so, so good in this episode. Your reaction is exactly how I reacted when I first watched.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. Because I was like, oh, that's what's going to happen here? And the last bottom... And I could have had a million guesses. And I was pretty convinced that the show was going to be against direct cameos. I thought it was going to be references and nods. I didn't for a second think we were going to get a cameo, let alone the Titan, which... It blew my mind. I was going to do this later, but we're just going to do it right now. The Titan appearing is fucking incredible. It's so great because we've talked about this on the episode, on the show a couple of years back, but the Titan was designed by a fan. So in the mid-aughts, there was a series of Star Trek books called Star Trek Titan, and it was following Riker on his new ship. And the Titan was just mentioned at the end of Nemesis. Riker is going off to command his own ship. We know that he has a Saurian first officer. Deanna is joining him. We have no idea what the Titan looks like. So they ran a competition.
Mahogany. The answer is mahogany.
All mahogany. So they ran a competition in the books and said, this is what the Titan will look like for the books. And you can send in your submissions. And Sean Taranjo, I'm sorry, I'm going to mispronounce his name. Taranjo. Anyway, he designed the Titan, won the competition. It was on the front cover of the books. So when the Titan arrives, I'm like, oh, it's the same one from the books. That's amazing. They use the same design. And it's such... I can't imagine how Sean must have felt seeing that on screen and just being absolutely giddy to see... And it's such like a great nod to the fans. Like, this is a big input into Star Trek. And to see it turn up, Riker firing all phasers, it's... What a chef's kiss. It's what a great way to end the episode. It's so fun.
Because at the end of an episode, at the end of a season, when the Cerrito burrito is down and out, it's being grabbed by all these arms, and you're thinking, okay, is it going to get ripped apart? Probably not. I guess maybe we're going to end on some sort of cliffhanger for season 2, which is a completely understandable thing to do. Go ahead and just end on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And really, the cliffhanger of this episode is Boimler leaving for the Titan.
Yeah, we'll that's the cliffhanger. That yeah.
But no, it's a rescue. And of course it would be a rescue.
It's so fun.
Why wouldn't there be other people to show up and assist? And one of my sins in that moment was going to be like not sending off for help. Like, we don't see that happen. And maybe they didn't. And maybe it was just the other call for help that brought the Titan. So maybe it's still a sin if I can remember to bring that up during the sin section.
Well, they did try to send out a distress call, but the Packlet ship was blocking all communications. So I think the Titan was responding to the Stromanovs, the Solvangs. the Solvangs thing that the Cerritos was replying to as well.
Yeah. And so that was like that's fun, another ship. But I, of course, it was lost on me that it was a Titan. It was lost on me that Riker would be there.
Yeah,
the shock
course.
For me was when I saw Riker animated and it registers. And I'm like, is that true? Is that Troy?
Is that them right next to you? Is that Troy?
And then it's I heard so her voice and it was perfect. And I was so happy. And, chills. You know, so yes, this show is so adept at like humor and action and like fast-paced storytelling, and it's an animation. It's like really just breaking all of these things down. So yeah, I bet it would be surprising to all of a sudden see one of your favorite TNG characters animated and on screen. I mean, it obviously was for me, but when it actually came out, that must have been really kind of fun.
Yeah. At the time, it suddenly hit me what year we were in, and I was like, oh, this lines up. Riker is out there commanding the Titan doing his thing, and I was so ready for Lower Decks just to be its own side thing where, yeah, the Enterprise and everyone is out there, but don't plan on seeing anybody. But you can do that in animation because it's so much, you don't have to explain away the aging and why everybody looks different. And it's just, it's, this is where Riker would be. And it's so perfect to not miss that opportunity.
It makes me want an animated Titan show.
You wouldn't be the first one to call out for it. It was like, yeah, everybody wanted that.
That would be so much fun to do an animated Titan show.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so much fun.
We have these amazing characters that, I know there's just such a rich history with it all. And while you have the actors still here, we just need their voices. That's it.
Just need their voices, and then we can
animate them in youthful ways, you know? Yeah.
What's amazing is that this was the second season one finale where Riker is the Ex Machina, because at the end of Picard season one, Captain Riker turns up with a fleet of ships to save Picard when they're on the planet and the Borg ship and all of like the flowers and stuff.
Oh yeah.
He turns up with an army of Shenheis that's the name of the ship, not the class, to face off against the Romulans. So I was like, really? You're just going to keep rolling out Riker to save the day as the Ex Machina?
That's right. I mean,
so
why fun. Wouldn't
why
you?
Not? Why
Send
not?
Send them everywhere.
Send them. Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. So you have like, I mean, that's fun. That's a great crescendo to get to and a really fun fan punch for this finale. But the episode was doing great before that. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
It's so beautiful. This is a gorgeous episode with the red background, with this really creepy sort of like scrap ship that's adapting all these different pieces of other ships
and their weaponry.
And they're like these scavenge people. What are they called?
The Pankleds.
Okay. So, you know, these guys they're so funny. Just calling everything the Enterprise. I'm so with you. I am so with you, Pankleds. That is exactly it.
Everything is an Enterprise. It's so adorable because it's like, we've got you, Enterprise. And the bit that kills me is when the second ship comes up and he's just like, oh no, another Enterprise.
Yeah, worked for me. It really did.
And they're the same guys that are like, red alarm, red alarm.
Oh, okay.
So they become the accidental recurring villain of Lower Decks. They do pop up again. But we had no idea the Pankleds were going to show up. They are the perfect Lower Decks villain because they're just a one episode reference. Like, they appear in one episode of TNG. They manage to outsmart the Enterprise by kidnapping Geordi, and they're just like, their entire thing is, we like to go. We like things that make us go. He is smart. We're going to keep him. And they just managed to like blackmail their way into stealing Geordi to repair this technology that they don't understand, that they've stolen from other people. And then you just kind of move on and you never hear from the Pankleds again. They maybe get like a name drop or something. So to have them as the big bad here, when you're like, oh, is it the Borg? Is it the Romulans?
Yeah.
Who is it? Who's stealing all of this technology? Oh, it's the fucking Pankleds. You got the derpiest bad guy from TNG and made them the big bad. That's amazing.
But they have managed to do some pretty terrible stuff. I mean, we saw an entire ship be destroyed in a epic way.
So pretty.
Holy shit. Okay, so let's talk about how the Solvang goes down.
Yeah.
Not only is the background just gorgeous, we've got this, you know, big red star and the blue from the nacelles is standing out beautifully. And it's just such a gorgeous animation. It really, really is. And then they grab onto it and it warps away and just rips them to shreds.
It's like beautiful.
Have you ever killed a lightning bug? If you have,
oh no, you're a bad person.
You rip their little butts off while they're glowing and you smear it on your clothes.
Oh my God.
And it
that's
just
dark.
Glows
that's
until it dies. Well, like when you're a kid,
no
you don't
idea.
Really know that this isn't, so another kid shows you, do you want to glow like a bug? And you're like, yeah, I do. And then they rip out the guts and they spread it on you. This was part of my youth. I only did it one summer because I realized what I was doing and it was terrifying for me from here on out.
Want to be raised in the Midwest.
But anyway, all I'm looking at is that smear across the screen and it's just sort of like slowly dissolving and I'm like, oh, that is so grim.
Yeah.
Beautifully animated.
It's so clever to make it look so pretty because it's just the second they jump to warp. So for me, in my physics brain, I'm like, oh, that's all of their pieces like being aggressively jumped to light speed and then stopped and just the like the blue shift smear is so pretty. It's it's gorgeous. Is when, like, you just know this episode is like hitting on another level as well. Like, they saved some money in the back pocket to really animate some stuff in this episode.
And they still managed to do a very interesting thing, which is to give a little bit of character and life to these people who are dead now.
Like, yes.
They were on screen for just a minute or less, mm-hmm. and we know that it was a brand new ship, and that no one was supposed to wear their shoes, and that they hadn't even peeled the plastic, you know.
And they immediately get fucked up by the pack plates.
And they got this captain who is trying to keep everything, you know, clean and organized, and I can envision that being the case. I don't want to get a new car because I know it's going to just fall to the ruins of my child and myself, making spills everywhere, and I'm not ready yet.
Tater tots and sticky fingers everywhere.
Mustard. Yeah. Yes, just smeared. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was a really important moment for the writers and the storytellers to shine a bit, that they didn't just make a whole red shirt situation. They just marched somebody in and marched them out. There was some gravity to the loss of the people of the ship. And then also there's a reference to it from Captain Freeman when she's kind of joking around like, oh, I'm going to go have to do this for, I'm going to go have to tell this lady, go save her, blah, blah, blah. And then you show up and it's just like, they're all dead.
Oh shit, they're all dead. And from that moment on is when it's just absolutely firing. I made a note and I was like, just slightly drifting when Boimler and Mariner are fighting really hard over this promotion, and Boimler's taking issue that Mariner's being serious and taking advantage of the nepotism, and Mariner's arguing like, you always wanted me to take this seriously. What's going on? I was just drifting, and then bam, drop out of warp into all of the shit. Everyone then has game faces on. And it's just, it's so fun when Mariner rolls up her fucking sleeves and then takes charge and comes up with a plan. Like, yeah, let's go.
We kind of needed this because the show up to this point in my imagination is just like, tra-la-la-la, fun, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh
no, shit.
This crew just got through a very dangerous situation that killed the previous people, and they're all making fast-paced decisions really well. And you also have the captain, who is very injured. In a very telling moment, you have real Mariner coming to save her mom, just like she did in the episode where she had to save her mom from herself. So that is a true-to-herself characteristic where she, you know, jumps in and the stakes are high, but she's taking the lead, and the mom is like, take the lead, do whatever you have to do to get us out of the situation. And then we get to see the fun stuff, like all of her contraband is aiding in them succeeding.
It all pays off.
That was so fun to watch them have to fight their way out of that situation and see that this isn't just a crew that's sort of fumbling their way from B mission to B mission. They had to step up to the plate in a major way to get themselves out of trouble. Now, they actually didn't get themselves out of trouble because they had to be saved by the Titan. But the momentum that this episode gives the show, it reminds you that even though these might be the burrito people, they're actually still very skilled and capable. And Shaq's sacrifice and what Rutherford has to do in this episode and his sacrifice, everyone does very unexpected things. And then there's just so many characters all just in harmony, just drumming along. I mean, you saw everybody. We have a peanut hamper all of a sudden. Badgie's back. You've got like every part of the ship we're running around and seeing. So this was a feast for the eyes in a fast-paced fashion. And if you weren't prepared for it, you would have known, because this series would have kicked you out long ago, because it's such a fast-paced series. And this is a fast-paced finale that does so much. But I think when you walk away from it, you're like, wow, they were really a capable crew. We saw some pretty cool, heroic things going on that made me like these characters instead of be really annoyed on their boring days, because this was a non-boring day.
It's the exact opposite problem that we had with the Buffer Time episode, where the joke about Buffer Time was great, but then when they're actually being invaded by the people with the diamond sticks, and the ship is like going to shit, Freeman is still harping on about buffer time instead of dealing with the invasion. And this is the exact opposite end of that. This is, they're having arguments about whatever things are important to them, but then when they're under the gun, it's back to being serious and back to their duty. And that's, I think that's the final buy-in that I have for this, is that I still want it. I can believe that this is how, I can believe this being a live action episode of Star Trek. Everything that happens here, I can believe happening in just like a slightly more comedy setting.
So, yeah, it's so absolutely. It just, and the whole thing sings, you know, like your very first question is how did the feel to have, you know, Mariner's secret out? This episode very quickly covers that up with this great adventure, and it's not the point anymore. The point is that everyone is working really, really well together. And I'm once again glad that that was kind of like done and over with, but they still followed their format really, really well. But they showed us, we can, like, let's show you the whole wheelhouse of what our animation department can do, what our voice acting crew can do, what the music can do. Like when the TNG music started, I was like, hold on a second.
Hang on a minute. I know that.
Why but is that like, playing? You know?
Wait a minute. I know these people. So, but the Packlid theme itself is great. The bad guy, like they have their own theme when the Cerritos is getting carved up. That bad guy Packlid theme is so, so good. Like they hit every single mark. And unlike the voice acting, Rutherford really shines for me in this one because he does this. He does one of the tropes that we all love in Star Trek, and it's the bridge shouting at the engineer the things to do, and the engineer saying, "I can do that." And it's such a Geordi thing because he will just like list off a load of technical things while running around engineering, redirecting stuff, taking command. And it's like, yeah, it's a trope, but it's one that we love. And they just they do it so, so well. It's exactly what you, Mariner being the captain in that moment, is exactly what you want from a Star Trek adventure. It's so fun.
Yeah, I was a little bit like, just to kind of, I guess, land on Rutherford for a little bit here. I was kind of sad for about 5-10 minutes when he starts to go through his personality chip. And I thought, oh my God, the Rutherford that I love isn't real.
Oh, because it's just part of the personality.
It's a programming thing.
No, so it's not.
Who he really is isn't that guy. And I got kind of sad. But then by the end, when there's nothing in there, it's like, it's really him. And he has that same vibe. And so I was relieved because I genuinely thought that there was going to be like a moment of, that he's not really who I think that he is.
That's interesting. Well, man, that, I mean, and then that goes to some interesting places when Rutherford gets his memory back and starts finding other memories, which I think is in season 3. Is that when we have like the evil Rutherford? You've seen those episodes, haven't you?
Something happens, I think, like a short circuit situation or something like this, maybe. I can't remember exactly, but I do remember that he starts to have some memories as to who implanted the chip and kind of more of what he's...
Yeah, there's the evil Starfleet admiral that has put virus in. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's a really, really good point that like was that worry that Rutherford wasn't your Rutherford. It was just a filter. Really,
because there was overly optimistic, which was sort of similar.
Yeah, it's like him anyway. Yeah,
exactly. And so I didn't know, and I was kind of watching the screen when he'd be scrolling through the different options for hints about whether that was an intentional part of what they were doing. Is this really dark part of storytelling that happens whenever you're writing deep things, which is that the characters you love aren't always the characters you think they are. And I feel like they have an opportunity with Rutherford because he is so beloved. But when the implant came out and was pointed out in chat, I think he should have died too. Absolutely. That was
Bixen.
A lot.
Yeah.
But and Tendi, you think that maybe it's going to go towards like the sadness, but then her enthusiasm, like, we get to be best friends again.
It's so adorable.
And then they spend the rest of it like retelling and reintroducing. And so just to kind of move on from that and not make that a central thing any longer was also like really, you know, interesting. But to have Rutherford have to be the one, or to have Rutherford be the one to deliver the virus using Badgie,
I love that.
so fast.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of don't realize. I mean, yes, when you're in space, you're going to be making fast-paced decisions and you're not going to be thinking about it all too much. But holy shit, that was like...
That's a bad choice, Rutherford.
You have... Yeah. I guess I should ask you this, because it kind of leading into the whole Rutherford making this choice, it happens because of Peanut Hamper. So as somebody, I've seen the Peanut Hamper episodes in the future, so
yes.
I kind of know what's going to be happening then. But we referenced this episode when we watched the Peanut Hamper episode.
Yes.
And you talked about how it was like an echo of another episode where Data, and then we watched it.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm remembering.
You are.
Data kind of goes to bat for the exocomps as a sentient creature, a being that has a choice to make.
Yes, exactly.
And so, and I can't remember what the sequence is or why that's important.
So Picard and Geordi are stuck on a space station, essentially on a mining station. And the only way to get them out is to send the exocomps over to fix the problem. And Data's just like, I'm not going to send them over because I think they have a right to live as much as Picard and Geordi have a right to live. However, and he just like locks out the Enterprise computer, and he's like, it's not, and Riker loses his shit with him. And Picard, and Data's just like, I can't do it. And then Riker's like, well, what if we ask them if they're willing to do it? And then the exocomps are like, yeah, we'll do it. And all three of them beam over, and one of them deliberately stays behind to beam the other two back and sacrifices themselves.
And is that the first exocomp episode?
That's the first and only exocomp episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Okay. So I think the setup for this episode is that we assume that this exocomp is going to make the same sacrifice, but the animated series decides to say, nah, and give this exocomp like a super sassy personality and just beam the fuck out.
You got to deal with the other half of that problem. If they are individuals and they have personalities, they aren't all going to be altruistic. Like, that's the TNG viewpoint. This is the Lower Decks Deep Space Nine viewpoint, where people are just like, oh, no, I just joined Starfleet to piss off my dad. That was all.
And everyone is like, no, it's the choice for the greater good.
The greater good, the needs of the many.
And so Peanut Hamper pieces out. And immediately it's like new decisions to be made. And so Rutherford goes to do the next best thing and make the sacrifice for everyone else. Even though the setup was that it needed to be somebody who could survive in space and do all of these things, like they were setting it up, you know.
Yeah, to be really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then Shax joins him. And I loved this so much. I think there's a lot of really fun animation as I like kind of am going back over the episode in my mind. But the one that stands out the most to me is Shax when he gets into that room. And so Rutherford's going to run over and put the virus in or whatever. But Shax, like, he's like, he's just like almost like a video game, just like jumping back and forth.
He's so
just
big.
This big, bulky guy, like, so happy to just tear people to shit.
For the prophets! I love how he just manhandles the shuttle and just pushes it. It's an entire vehicle, and he just pushes it out of the ship. It's like, not today, baby bear.
Yes. That when he calls him baby bear, is that what he called him? It was baby something. Was it baby bear?
It's bear because they're part of like the bear pack. Like when he's changing divisions and he joins security for a little bit.
Baby bear. Yeah. I wrote it down because I couldn't remember where that came from, and I couldn't remember the animal, but I really love that part when he pushes him out and he just stays behind and we assume to be blown up. And right whenever the cat doctor was going to get her coital hooks in there too.
It's so perfect, isn't it? Like, Shax has been slept on the entire season. Like, it's so amazing how this show manages to read how fans were going to react to different characters. Because throughout the season, we're like, we want more Shax. But you can't respond to that because you've already made season one. And yet they give us an outstanding Shax moment that like you couldn't have predicted, or I guess they did predict that we would want that. And it's great because it's such like a Bajoran thing as well. They're all martyrs because they've been oppressed by the Cardassians for so long. Every mission is a chance to die. Like every single mission is, I will die for my people because we're going to have to blow up the Cardassians and we don't have the technology to fight them. So everything is, we're going to go down in a ball of smoke for the chance at freedom. So when he's like, this is the greatest day of my life, this is everything that he has lived his life to do. Like he's ready to die for his people all of the time. And it's so fun. It's so fun.
His exuberance coming through in the animation and in the way that it's written and in the vocal performance. Mm-hmm. It just
perfect
hits.
Vocal performance. It's so good.
So well. And so yeah. But you know, without that brief moment of Rutherford joining his crew, I wonder if that would have felt the same. But I don't know. Him saying Baby Bear was oh, so incredible.
It's so cute. Anyway. It's so adorable. And it's just, there is no, it all happens so quick. There's no time to question anything, really. He's just like, this is my plan. Grabs Rutherford to the shuttle, yeah. Fly the shuttle, crest into the ship. Rutherford, do your thing. And then even after the code is uploaded, he's just like, okay, rip out the eyepiece and then run back onto the ship, push you away. Like, he's just like, we have no time to talk about the plan. It's just, I'm going to do it.
Instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All instinct.
And that, it's what I think I enjoy is if we ask ourselves, what is a Starfleet officer? What is their instinct in the crisis and who's in charge of those moments? You know, when Rutherford's in charge, it's putting a virus directly into his own head.
Mm-hmm. When, yes, exactly. You know,
Jax is doing these just attack things. And I was thinking about Worf whenever I was watching him, just this like pure warrior sort of vibe. Then you have Mariner who at the helm is like, all hands abandon ship. Like, let's get the fuck out of here. And that was the right call to make. You know, she actually ended up guiding everyone, and she was telling Handsome to get the bags, it's time to go, and he's like, yep. So everyone kind of fell into that the roles that they needed to roll into. I just had this memory though, so I want to switch gears.
Mm.
You laughed multiple times,
of course,
but at one point you laughed when, speaking of like, so Mariner says get the bags and Ransom's like, yep, and then they run with a wounded Freeman into sick bay.
Yeah.
And the doctor appears like right like this. And then says, oh, sorry. You know, put the captain here. Uh-huh. Why does that crack you up so much? Just, what got you?
T'Ana cracks me up because it's how she's fighting these cat instincts. Like, and it's because I love cats so much. So if like obviously Dr. T'Ana is focused, like the ship is under attack. So if a cat is at battle stations, it's like the heckles are up. You can be doing the nicest thing at all. But if you surprise it, it's going to fucking hiss at you and claw. And it's this instinct that bursts out of her, which is like, meow! Oh, sorry. Yep, come over here. I have a job to do. It's like, you guys are good. I'm sorry I meowed at you so violently. But I wanted that to be a packlet that comes in and gets the brunt of that meow. So it's just every character. Whenever each character is written, their nature is always first. It's like, how would this character react in this situation? And it's such a like such a great bit of writing and storytelling. Like in this moment, she violently meows at anyone that comes into her domain. It's so great.
That's amazing. That's
just, fun. It hit me. It hit me so good.
What are some of the other things that you liked? Like references or visuals on screen? One of them that comes to mind is the very, very beginning.
Mm.
We're kind of revisiting a TOS moment, and then there's a TOS mention, and she's like, what's TOS?
Oh,
and
my
he
gosh.
Says, the old scientists, I think.
Those is old what scientists.
Mm-hmm. I assume those references you love.
Yeah.
But I was really enjoying the things like the how they taped off a section and the tape had the deltas all across it. Or like the sign on the computer that says, do not obey. It was like a big sticker. This is just do not obey.
Do not listen.
Like, these kinds of animated decisions, I think, are really, really fun. But was there anything like else about this besides the big things we've talked about that you wanted to like bring up?
Yeah, the opening is really fun. It's obviously a reference back to a classic episode of the original series. And it's something that you could make every single episode, picking up on a concluded story and then what happens next. It's why Second Contact is so, so fun. So the idea that Kirk manages to save these people from this computer called Landru that was forcing them to fight, had like subjugated them, and Kirk confuses the computer program into like a feedback loop, and that's how he ends up saving the day, which is why Freeman is like, don't you do this again or I'll paradox you just like Kirk did. So it's fun to go back and revisit that and see what happens next. And initially I was disappointed that we didn't have more of that, but then with like the benefit of hindsight, I'm like, but then you're just redoing the same episode. Like, unless you have something interesting to say, like the most interesting one for me is when they revisit the planet where they have that drug dependency on each other and they actually revisit and see what happens next. Like, if there's a big question next, that makes sense. But this, it was just like frustration of, I can't believe we've done this and they've gone back to listening to the computer. Like, what was the point? But the biggest thing in that moment was Ransom saying, I love going back to the TOS era. Because whenever something in universe, it's almost like they're crossing a line. It's like if they'd said TNG or something. So I'm immediately perked up and I'm like, your explanation better be good. For whatever reason that you're saying TOS, you'd better nail it. And those old scientists did it for me. Like, as soon as he said, oh, yeah, that's what I call them, those old scientists, you know, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, I'm like, all right, I'll let you have it. That's okay. That's a good way to bring in TOS into canon, which obviously pays off later because the crossover episode is TOS, those old scientists. Yeah,
yes, that's right. That's so right.
In terms of other references, like when we, the question for you is like, for that beginning 5 minutes, they're talking about Landru, the Red Hour, Kirk. Are you just like checked out? Are you like, is this going to be another one where I just don't get what's happening? Or at this point, are you like, okay, reference is fine, but I know there's going to be a payoff for it. Or I know that I'm not being excluded. Mm. Like, or were you worried that, oh, is this going to require some knowledge of an episode that I haven't seen?
Star Trek writers are very, very good at their craft. And this series will prove that every episode for me, because every single time you've had that concern or wonder, I've been fine. Because you do need to give the basic information. And with my supreme intellect, I can fill in the blanks. But they did, they line it out for you. Like they say, beta 3, suppressed creativity, back to worshiping a computer.
Yeah.
And then you can make assumptions about what the Red Hour purge is and him being like, I just got my Sith or Scythe or whatever. Like, we don't have a Red Hour anymore. So you can kind of like fill in the blanks and make some assumptions, number one. Number two, this is in the beginning of the episode. And according, if I go back on like historically how their episodes are sort of designed, I know that this is probably going to be a quick in and out. So I don't need to understand everything happening as much as if it was in the main part. I think it's more annoying because they do have some that are completely unrelated, but they're sort of like loosely tied.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's just the cat's out of the bag and, you know, his comm badge was open, which let's talk about that just real briefly. What a beautiful way to tell a secret.
Oh, it's so great. Just overhearing a telephone conversation. It's
because
so fun.
We've talked about it before. Just how do these things work? You know, how does this computer know when to project what you're saying on the speaker system? When does it not? Because sometimes you hit the button and you, and sometimes you have a little flappy open thing and sometimes people hear and sometimes you say out and sometimes you just start talking and it works anyway. And it's very loosey goosey when we go to Senate, it seems. Mm-hmm. So this gives you the moment when it's just not working well, where you don't have the badge where it needs to be. And the consequence of that is that you're broadcasting and you just don't know it. And how many times have we heard people shit when you weren't supposed to? Now, my question is, like, do you take it off when you go to the bathroom? Or is it just at any moment in time you could hear whatever personal things might be happening?
Because the implication here is that you can accidentally leave it as an open channel. Because that's the thing that you can do. Like, okay, leave the comm channel open so that we have this situation, this two-way thing coming back. And we can always hear you. We always know what's going on. But the fact that it accidentally happens, I mean, unless she's like folded it up and is like pressing against the badge because she's tied her like uniform. She's taken her top off and like tied it around her waist. So I guess Boimler's. That like, oh, it was Boimler's, wasn't it?
And it was, he took his off and set it down and it is just on and they're calling to him. And then the comm channel is open and they're listening for his response. And there are many comments in the live chat about how this should not work. But that's the thing is like,
Yeah.
I think that that's the point, is that there have been times whenever it should have worked, shouldn't have worked. It's just this magical thing. But the idea of being able to be overheard is the reason that the secrets, and I thought that was kind of clever.
But I think I kind of give it a big pass in this episode, because it's better than them having this conversation in a hallway and then Ransom overhears it and then spreads the word. And then, like, because that just felt a little bit, that feels a little bit anticlimactic, because if it's that careless, it could have happened at any point, really. This just leads to the hilarity of course, Boimler digging him a huge, huge hole. And then that's what you would do. You would immediately beam them onto the bridge and say, explain yourself, Ensign. And this, he just is horrified. He dies on the spot. His soul leaves his body.
And it's such a great humor beat. Oh, man, I wish I was in these conversations with the people who create these shows, to have that person say, let's just cut Boimler's scream off, like, real fast, you know.
It's so perfect.
I thought that was really, like, just a very nice, just we're moving on, you know, from this moment. And it really does move on pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, and it kind of explains why they did the secret, why you wouldn't want that. And they kind of give some good reasons for it. Freeman doesn't want, is embarrassed that she is the most demoted, demerited officer in the fleet. And Mariner doesn't want to be treated like the daughter of a captain and an admiral. She wants to be whatever, whether she fucks up or succeeds, she wants to do it on her own, which is, it totally makes sense. Rolling back to the Red Hour stuff, the Landru bits at the beginning, what I do like is that it isn't just a reference for the sake of referencing the original series. It leads to Freeman talking about the Prime Directive and her issues with it. So this is a great example of, so in this case, we can interfere, but we can't. Like, we can make sure the computer isn't ruling them, but we can't make sure, give them the tools to make sure it doesn't happen again. So we have to keep going back and fixing it. And it's this, like, the jump between TOS and TNG eras, where TOS, I don't think there was a Prime Directive. I mean, it was mentioned, but it was very loosey-goosey. And in TNG, there are much more episodes about, we can't do this because it violates the Prime Directive. So it did lead to a clash between, like, what the doctrine of Starfleet is now and what they're allowed to do. And it leads back to the conversation that Freeman and Mariner have at the end, which is, okay, I have to follow the Prime Directive, but maybe you don't have to so much. So she can bend the rules kind of with and without permission. So again, it gives more context for what their relationship is on the ship and how it can work and why there's a place for both types of Starfleet. I love it. Deep Star Trek work, people. Deep.
Let's shift from something deep to something not so deep. Is a hand pie a real thing?
It should be.
Okay.
Definitely is in England. We have all kinds of hand pies. We just call them pasties.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. They're not usually desserts, though. I guess, I mean, an apple, the McDonald's apple pie is a hand pie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard anything called a hand pie in my life until
today.
No,
no sane person calls it a hand pie. It's just a pastry. Pastries are all hand pies. I guess they need a filling.
What do you think, like, is there a British person working on these that would just be like, let's do hand pies?
I hope so.
Of all of the things that Billups could be carrying around in his little basket.
He has a hand pie.
Hand pies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was another British reference, because Rutherford had a British accent and he said, what's all this?
Oh, blimey, what's all this then, Governor?
And I wish it would have been like, what's on?
What's on?
That's a really deep one.
What's on the Cerritos? Yeah, that's a deep cut. Mm-hmm.
Did you like the Ransom's hard on her bit?
Oh, it cracked me up.
I enjoyed that quite a lot.
Yeah. What is it that he actually says?
I am hard on her. I've always got a hard on for her, not for her.
I mean, I'm not hard right now.
Because I'm not hard now. Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. I love the, I do love Mariner, while we're ticking off stuff, I love the rant at the end. Mariner's just like, you motherfucker, I can't believe that you left the show. When you get back here, I'm going to feed you to an armus. Which is the thing that kills Tasha. That's the ink monster that kills Tasha. I'm going to feed you to an armus.
That's dark.
That's so dark. I love it.
I really think we should talk about the ending, because that's a huge thing to do. I think we should land there or go through our notes and button things up. But we really need to talk about the end of this episode.
Yes. Boimler gets his promotion aboard the USS Titan. And that's where the series ends and is obviously resolved in season 2, episode 1.
Yeah, obviously.
How did you feel about it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
So when we watched the finale of season, which season's coming up?
Five,
Jesus. So yeah. Then maybe it was the finale of season 4 where everyone's sort of like picking their next place to go.
Yes, you're correct.
Is that right?
I don't want to do any spoilers in case you're listening to all of our coverage in order, but yes, they are at a point where their careers are diverging at the end of season 4.
And one of the things I say, I think in that episode is that I like that they're able to remind us that these are real people in their universe that mm-hmm. move on with their careers. It's not a Simpsons situation where we're going to be watching 5,200 seasons of the mm-hmm. same exact day over and over and over again with these characters that never age and don't really have dimension. I mean, I'm not trying to dig on Simpsons specifically, like SpongeBob or just these like super light cartoon-esque.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Spaces. Yeah, where it kind of doesn't matter. That's not what Lower Decks is trying to do. And to end episode 10 in season 1 in a similar mm-hmm. fashion to where I actually am on the timeline of things was really interesting. I'm like, oh man, they're already playing with that format really early on in the series. And I think it makes it more believable that we're in a real Star Trek world, even though it's still hard to believe that this is a real Star Trek world.
It's so hard, isn't it? And I think it gets easier to believe later on. As they kind of take themselves a little bit more seriously. I don't know that they ever imagined they would get 5 seasons. Like this could have been I could imagine this being a one and done. I don't know how much was agreed up front, but it's so unpredictable. And this was the early days of like Star Trek, not the early days of Star Trek coming back, but it's early-ish and it's the first branch out into animation. Like we haven't done this since the 70s. Like who knows how it was going to be received? It could have just been canceled.
Yeah, to that point, this would have been a great ending.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but no, I don't want it
to
end.
Every single button-up they did in this season could be fine for me. I could leave every character and be like, that was fun.
Yes, I agree. My hesitance is no, because I love it so much, I want more. But yes, you are right, actually. That could be
a great
place to end. Yeah.
They
if it's just like an homage to the TNG era of Star Trek, it'd be a one season reference fest homage. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And I think like giving Boimler his promotion with Riker would be a fantastic ending, a great place to end Boimler. Yeah,
great end for his story. It's his dream. He gets to work with a TNG-er.
Mariner's was kind of one-upped by Boimler, but still had her epic lead in the final episode.
Yes.
Obviously, we know that doesn't happen. You've got Tendi and Rutherford just as adorable as ever, you know, talking back and forth, and everyone is in a pretty great place. You had one death, but that was okay. You had a ship explosion as well. Obviously, we know that didn't happen and we are going on, but I look at this season as a package and think that this is such a great example of what can be done in this format. So, yeah.
I agree. I've said it before. It is the strongest first season of any Star Trek show. I think I could argue that against any of them. I think Strange New Worlds would be a close second, but I still feel like this is even stronger than Strange New Worlds' first season because it is so comfortable with what it is. Which leads us to a nice little question. Now that we've kind of wrapped up the first season of Lower Decks, memory is a hard thing, but how would you like compare it to the other seasons that you've watched? How does it feel overall now that you've finished the first season of Lower Decks? Because I know as there were some rough spots kind of mid-season.
Yeah, and that's usually the case. Anytime I watch something, I kind of get a little bit of a dip. I really like the season. There's a simplicity to it. As the show progresses, there's more complexity introduced to each character. There's backstories that we learn more about. There's mysteries that are solved. There's revisits of characters that come back. And then there's still themes that they continue to kind of hit on, and it's thankfully not a love interest. It's a mother-daughter back and forth.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would say that this is, I don't know. I think this is coming out in the lead for me because the simplicity is just nicely done. It's like an, it's a really nice series to watch. If you're just going to watch one season mm-hmm. of this show and you just made it this, I think it would be a fine, you know, a fine thing. I don't know that what it does with the characters or something that I necessarily need because I'm not as invested in these characters as I am with like the live action stuff. I want to be in Strange New Worlds every day, all day. That's where I want to be. Mm-hmm. I'm pissed that we don't have it already.
Yeah.
Where the fuck is my show?
It's coming. Like, spring. It's coming. And they've already started.
I need a lot of it and I need it to make sense. And yeah. I want money in that. Yeah. I need those characters. That's where I want to be. And it scares me because I know that that's like, it's on a hard stop because it's in the past, quote unquote, the past.
I mean, but that hard stop is 10 years. That's longer than any Star Trek show has ever had. No Star Trek show has gone beyond 7 years. So
I'm nervous because they're messing with people's TOS love. But that's where my heart is. That's where my heart is because I really, really like what they did, especially season 1. Season 2 is season 1 was good. And so I want to go back. I'm nervous about it. I don't want to go back, but I'm not as invested in these characters. And I think it is because that they're animated. I think I'm like a little bit removed from the investment more than it's like, I watch Lower Decks to be entertained. I don't watch it to like, I don't know. I'm not like learning something about Star Trek. I'm kind of like, haha, we're having fun with Star Trek. Whereas I feel like in the other shows, there's just such a seriousness to it that like really solidifies its reality in sci-fi world. I don't know.
Well, for me, it was like the perfect time to have like Lower Decks because I was like, let Discovery do new Star Trek and be like bold and this new adventure. And the people that don't want to do that, they can enjoy Lower Decks. Like, they fine. If you want to live in the past and just have that bit of Star Trek history, this is the show for you. That's perfect. So it was really kind to the fandom as well that the people that weren't necessarily connecting with Discovery had this to connect to. It gets all of the pips for me. This episode gets 4. The season gets 4 as well overall as a season. It's my favorite of the 4 seasons we've had so far, mainly because, like you said, it's that simplicity. It doesn't have like the, other than the Mariner Freeman thing, it doesn't really have an overarching like conspiracy or a story or a mystery that's tying it together. And all of the other seasons do, and that's one of the weaker parts for me. But this, just as a explosion of Star Trek fandom, is incredible.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. This is another all pippage for me. And I feel like because of how this season ends, I would also give this season some massive pippage, all of the pippage.
Massive pippage. With that, now that we've finished gushing over it, let's head over to engineering to just do a few sins. Red alarm.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Bassiter. You first.
Well, Rutherford survives this. Next.
I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? Like, it rips his eyeball out and the side of his head and
was
everything.
I don't know if his eyeball was
it's
already
just his
out.
Eyepiece. Yeah, it's... he has an empty socket. One either way, he has something there that should not, that was there that is not. It's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Yeah.
And Shax isn't.
It seems important.
As far as I know, a doctor that is trained to do that, and it works. He just rips it off. It's so hard. None of my sins mean anything. Like I don't want to sin this episode, Danae. I mean, okay, my big one is. The Packlet ship, its arm is grabbed onto the nacelle of the Saskatchewan and it then goes to warp and that kills everybody. I feel like it's a really easy thing to not have happen. Like, this is one of the things where the ship should take over. Like, don't jump to warp if your boot is stuck in something and it's going to rip your skeleton out of your body. Like, just...
Grim.
Like, that's basically what happens. Like, I left my foot behind, sorry, it took my skeleton with it. Because Freeman has to manually say, no, drop the engine, stop it. That's what happened to them. If Freeman knows, the computer should know and be like, hey, we're not going to jump to warp Because right now, that's a bad idea. We shouldn't do it.
The computer should stop them.
Yeah, the computer should have stepped in and said, nope, no warp drive for you. It's a bad idea.
What's the name of the computer that's alive?
Zora from Discovery.
From Discovery, that's right.
Zora. She would have absolutely been like, FYI.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's holding our toe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do this, please.
Let's see. I have a question that could be a sin, but like, so Shax is dead, but then his earring is there. Does he just have a backup?
Yeah, I think he has more than one earring. That was my assumption. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They took it from his personal effects. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense. I kind of assumed it was just one, like one really important one.
You would think so, but I can see it being multiple. I can see that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, probably the alternative is that his fucking ear survived and they found it and retrieved it. I mean, bit of foreshadowing from Crisis Point when only like his ear survives after getting shot by Mariner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Bit of a kick in the teeth for Freeman's command crew. As soon as things go sideways, she's like, I need you, Mariner, and your batshit ideas take over. Which is just a big old kick in the dick for Ransom, maybe deserved, but the rest of her senior staff as well. Like, immediately, not hand over to just one lower decker that you know very well, but by extension, hand it over to Tendi, Boimler, Rutherford, fuck the rest of your crew. Clearly, the lower deckers know best. It's great for the show. Doesn't make any sense. It's like Picard talking to the extras out of nowhere and saying, hey, you guys take over for this episode, and Riker and Worf just take a seat back. So yeah, bit weird.
Yeah. What was another one of my sins? I don't have very many because I was so entertained.
Yeah. I mean, Titan Ex Machina, obviously, just coming in at the perfect time to save the day.
Absolutely. That's an easy one.
But it feels dirty because it's so fun.
Another easy one. Why don't they have phasers? Where are the phasers located that no one ever has phasers? Like, why do they have to? I mean, like, I love that they had to use her hidden contraband.
Oh, yeah.
Why wouldn't they have phasers?
Well, they're on their way to the weapons locker. And I'm just...
Why don't they have phasers other places is my point.
Yeah, why aren't they on... That's what I'm about to say. Why aren't they on the bridge? Like... The Enterprise D has phasers on the bridge. Voyager has phasers on the bridge.
Oh my God, the slow beaming.
Oh, I forgot about that. I made a note. They're beaming in. They're beaming in really slowly. It's so funny.
There's plenty of time to go to the little secret phaser panel and hit it with your fist.
Why
you know,
is it so far away from the bridge?
Why? Like, okay, so we don't want to have just... I'm an American. We have guns on our hips.
Yes.
Why don't you have phasers, you know, everywhere?
Especially when you can just set them to stun. They don't have to be deadly.
That's very exactly good point. Right.
Very
but
good
But you know what? If we didn't have that, we wouldn't have the double hand punch. So.
Yep. Double fist punch, which is my next sin, is announcing your shots before they happen.
Yes.
Twing, but, sidestep, double fist punch.
But then you wouldn't remember that it was a funny Kirk reference.
Exactly. It's very true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have another one, which is, this was a weird one, like Peanut Hamper. Tendi is worried for Peanut Hamper because she's being clumsy and fumbling everything. How does Peanut Hamper have the ability to replicate a tool to pick things up? Like, kids have those toys with like the little grabby arms.
Like, she was doing that on purpose.
Why?
Peanut Hamper was fucking up on purpose.
Why?
Because I thought that it was because she was going to steal the dilithium. Did I get that right?
Dilithium? I mean, yeah, you named it right. I don't know why she's stealing the dilithium, though.
She's like, ooh, it's more than I thought. And then she was like super interested in it. And because I know that Peanut Hamper is a shitty bitch, I was like, huh. And so she was like, oh, I'm having so much trouble. And so I think she was playing up that she doesn't care. She's not trying to excel. Okay. She's on her own mission to do whatever she's doing. So I just assume that she was purposefully... But cutting into people is fun, so she did that.
Hilarious. Yeah, well, I'm fine doing that. Okay, in that case then, Tendi should have said, wait, why isn't she replicating something to help her? It would have been super suspicious that the exocomp, that is a multi-utility creature, couldn't pick up things and didn't know to replicate something. Yeah, there we go. Found a way to sin it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? If you try hard enough, you can sin just about anything.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Anything's a sin if you're brave enough. Yeah.
That's
I've only got one more that really jumped out at me, and it was just the cliche of Ransom, yeah, we'll go and talk to Ransom about this. He's not just a meathead. Immediately demonstrates that he is a meathead because he happens to be working out at that time. Character says a thing and then is contradicted by character in the most direct way possible. Yeah. So it's an amazing episode. I don't want to sin it anymore today. I enjoyed it too much, I'll be honest.
You did tell me that it is number one.
Yeah. It is my favorite of the season. I don't know that it's the best of the season, but it's my favorite. Well, that was a stinking load of fun. I think that's a great way to send off season one of Lower Decks. Next week, everybody, in fact, the next 3 weeks, there is going to be a slight break. We contemplated it, we thought about it, but we didn't want to squeeze another like season of Captain's Pod into just the 3 episodes that we have between now and season 5 of Lower Decks, which we definitely want to cover live. So here's some dates for your diaries if you want to join us for the live show. Lower Decks loves to do this. In fact, lots of TV shows love to do this. They are airing episodes 1 and 2 at the same time. So if you want to join us for the live show, which is covering episodes 1 and 2 of season 5 of Lower Decks, that'll be on Friday, the 25th of October. And the podcast for those 2 episodes will be with you on Wednesday, the 30th of November. So it's just 3 weeks where you have to survive without us. And you know what? You can go and listen to our coverage of Lower Decks season 4. That's your challenge. See if you can get through all 10 episodes of season 4 in 3 weeks. I believe in you all. You can do it. But if you would like to send your complaints anywhere, you can send them to captainspod@cinemasins.com. or to our lovely Discord channel. We have a lovely Captain's Pod channel attached to the Cinema Sins Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins.
Yeah, because specifically, we want to know your thoughts on how to tell something about a person based on their favorite captain. Because this is apparently going to be happening with me a lot in my life, where this is I need to prepare myself. Help me. Send your questions. Send your feedback. Send your favorite captain's stories. That way I can prepare. CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. Yeah.
Which captain do you think the ambassador is? Hang around for the outtakes to understand why the hell we're talking about that at all. Give me Warp in the Factor of 5, 6, 7, 8.
And it's beam out. Sucks to be organic.
I love that so much. Live long and prosper. See you in November.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Hi! Hello! Hi. Okay, I gotta go pee. I wanted to come in so that you knew I was here, but I gotta pee. I'll be right back. Bye.
So you wanted to come in to tell me that you're here, but you're leaving.
Yes, you got it.
Great. Nailed it. Okay. Cool.
What? Huh? What'd you say?
Huh? None.
Okay.
Huh? Before we get into the show, I met somebody out in real life, an actual Trekkie in real life, and they told me their favorite captain.
Go on.
And I have to ask you, do you think when you meet somebody that loves Star Trek, and they're like, that's the first thing that they tell you, like, usually. This is my captain.
It's usually the first question I get asked. Yeah.
Really?
100%. Yeah. Who's your favorite captain?
Is this how people sort of section themselves in like a
very
group?
Very much. So
100 Star Trek people get together.
Yeah.
This is the first defining level of like how you
handshake.
Get separated.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Into groups. Yeah, exactly. And I could do an entire episode on what that means about you and how those different groups of people would interact with each other in a very broad sense.
Is this like astrology, but the Star Trek version?
Get off my ship.
No, I'm serious.
Get off my ship. I would love to do this.
To do what?
Discuss what each captain means. But I would want a group of people to do it with so that it's not just me dictating my perspective. I would want to like have a debate about how accurate this is. Like, what type of person are you if you identify with this captain the most?
Well, there's a difference between identifying with and then having a favorite.
Correct. Yeah. And I think there's a good discussion to have around, both of those things. And then also somebody that knows you, which captain they actually think you are. Like that, the meme of like what I think I am, what the internet thinks I am, what my boss thinks I am, which captain my family thinks I am, which captain my pet thinks I am. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So like, what kind of a captain do you think I am?
So this week we'll be doing Lewis.
Oh no.
Honestly, I think you're Janeway, and that's not just a woman thing. Like, you have a lot of Janeway about you. A lot of, like, straight to business, coffee dependence, will get my crew home no matter what. Don't fuck with me, I will skin you. It's very much Janeway. Like, welcome, but if you hurt my people, you're not leaving alive.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I did not expect that to be what you see. Are you afraid of me?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, 100%.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
What captain do you think you are?
It's hard to answer that question when I've seen so few captains in action.
Correct.
I've seen few episodes of Voyager, though I have seen maybe 10, but that's still not very much. I've seen a lot of TNG, so obviously I'm more familiar with Picard.
Mm-hmm.
Strange New Worlds is probably the next one that I've seen the most of. Yeah. And I like Pike a bunch. How many captains are usually on this list when people are considering like their captain?
It's usually the TV shows. So like the lead.
Kirk.
So Kirk, Picard, Janeway, Sisko, Archer, now Pike, probably Burnham from Discovery, although she wasn't technically captain until like season 4, but she's still included.
Now we have Freeman,
yeah. Oh, and Dahl from Prodigy.
Okay, so that's 9. That's a fair amount of options.
Yeah, and that's not even like lots of people become captains. So you have
Riker,
Captain Riker now. You have Sulu, who is a captain. Scotty, who is technically promoted to captain, I believe. And then you have all of like the ancillary ones that just pop up in episodes as well. But it's usually the leads of the TV show is the who is my captain.
This has got to be a website, right?
Who is my captain? Or like, just, what captain are you?
Yeah, you take a quiz and you figure out what captain you are.
It's been done hundreds of times. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quiz.
When I used to be a Facebook person, there was always like a take this Star Trek quiz to find out which captain you are or which chief engineer you are.
Pick your favorite movie genre. Horror, comedy, romantic, or musical?
Sci-fi.
Ian, there are four
this
options.
This is a bullshit quiz.
Pick the one that is your favorite in these four.
Go for them again.
Horror, comedy, romantic, musical.
That's bullshit. That's such a shit list. Horror.
Your celebrity crush.
Oh, for crying out loud. Give me the options.
This is a stupid quiz
this
already.
This is the worst quiz.
Gal Gadot.
Okay.
Natalie Portman.
Okay.
Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
Or Emma Stone.
Oh, that's Emma Stone.
We're learning a lot about you today.
Uh-huh.
What is your biggest fear?
This quiz.
Spiders, death, height, or I don't fear anything.
That's stupid. It's none of them. Spiders, heights, death.
Okay, that's a good one. How do you feel about your job?
Oh, wow, you want to do this right now?
I am jobless. I can pay my bills. I have a dream job. Lucky to have a job.
I mean, lucky to have a job.
Okay. What is your biggest flaw? Procrastination, anger, fear, or impatience?
Procrastination.
What's a superpower that you want? Flying, invisibility, time travel, or water breathing?
Time travel.
I knew that one. I already had it clicked. I've known one thing
Imagine
about
if
you
I said
so far.
Water breathing. Too late.
Your favorite subject in school? Maths, science, arts, lunch break.
Arts. No, science. Science. Can you go back?
I haven't. Yeah.
Okay. Science. Okay.
Mm-hmm. A secret talent that you have? Magic tricks. Cooking. Singing, playing an instrument.
What if I don't have any of them? What if I can't do any?
You are a great cook and you know how to play a music instrument. And I was shocked when you told me that you know how to do it because you took classes and you were like advanced in it. So I know at least
cooking.
Two. And I know that you can sing as well.
Cooking.
You don't want to talk about the other ones? Well, okay, that's fine. If you could visit one planet from our solar system, which one would it be?
Earth.
Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, or Venus?
They would all kill me. Earth. All of them would kill me. Mars. It's the least likely to kill me. It's the only one I can actually step on of those
options.
You really
do fear death. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. You're going to be so mad at this question.
Freeman. Oh, sorry. I thought you were giving me the answer.
No,
if it's star signs, I'm not finishing the quiz.
Which Star Wars weapon would you use in a fight?
The fuck kind of question is that in a Star Trek quiz?
I just checked that I did click on Star Trek.
You didn't click Star Wars by mistake. What are the options? Blaster, lightsaber.
Two lightsabers or your words?
Wait, the options are blaster, lightsaber, two lightsabers, or your words. That's
correct.
Such bullshit. Who wrote this quiz?
I don't know.
My words.
I just clicked on the first thing.
I just did the first thing. I'm trying to work out which captains these answers relate to. It's
apparently Archer.
Is that me? I'm Archer.
That's what this quiz has told us.
Okay, I'm Captain Archer. That's great.
You are guided by your decency, your intuition, which has taken you a long way so far. You are fiercely committed to your duty and task. Duty. You are sociable and have a great sense of humor.
It could be any captain.
That was so vague.
That was bullshit. I'm so mad. I have a quick update before we get into the show. It's a toilet roll update. You remember my toilet roll that didn't have the cardboard inside the tube?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I got to the end of the roll.
Which you can't really call a roll. I'm kidding. You can't.
I mean, it's still a roll.
It was more like a clump.
A clump. By the time you get to the end, it's a clump. So what they've done is the last like 10 sheets, they've glued together.
Mm-hmm.
But with like a spray adhesive. So very light, very, very light adhesive. And it just kind of like it was folded over and then it rolled and those last 10 sheets became its own tube from which it was adhered to. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess the climax of that is that it's a good idea. If you want to save a few inches of cardboard, then this works.
If you want to call that a climax.
I mean,
there's to, a story. To a story.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's the best climax this could have had. Captain's Pod, Stardate 16-92-27. Damn it, I write it. No, I wrote it down right.
No,
this is right, but I had to second guess it.
You still got it wrong then.
No, but I wrote, usually I don't write down the new Stardate, but I did this time, but I second guessed it because I did it last week. I did it so long ago that I assumed I hadn't done it. It's amazing.
Star date. Question for Danae. Having now seen this episode and the same three of Picard, which version of the Titan do you like better?
Oh, I can answer this. She doesn't remember the one from Picard.
This one, because I don't remember.
Yeah, there we go.
I won't.
I can answer that.
Predictions for season 5. I think we're going to come to an end. I think we're going to come to an end for Lower Decks. I think this is going to be it.
Well, we know it's the final season.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, it's definitely the final season. Yeah, 100%.
So in that case, I think we're going to see people planted in their spots.
Yes.
And maybe like each episode, we're going to have some like confirmations of where people are going and what they're doing. So Mariner's going to die. Boimler is going to become a hot dad bod dad with an alien on a planet somewhere. And Tendi is going to be a captain. And Rutherford is going to be chief engineer on her ship.
Love that.
Who am I missing? Peanut Hamper will be imprisoned.
Yeah, already
along
is.
Along with Badgie.
Already is.
But they'll have like a little kind of like, I don't know, like a jail scene where it kind of cuts over and they'll be living their happy jail life. Freeman is going to retire. Shax and Pussycat Doc are going to have a child using Tendi's DNA resequencing from the dog. The dog will come back.
Yeah.
The dog is going to come.
I love that's his name.
Come back. And be on Tendi's ship as her security officer.
Love that. That's perfect. I have some bold predictions that I'll put at the beginning of. I'll restate these at the start of like when we do one as well. Yeah, email in your predictions too. I think it's going to be an homage to a lot of the finales that we had during the 90s and the noughts. And I think the episode title of episode 10, the last episode of the season, will be Come to an End. It'll be dot, 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 come to an end because the last episode of TNG was all good things, dot, dot, dot.
Oh,
so I think this will be dot, 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 come to an end because they can't resist having a clever title. I think some part of it will be a holodeck program. Some part of it will take place across three time zones. This is a legit prediction. I think they will travel through time and they will see what happens to Voyager when Voyager comes home. Because the biggest sin among fans for Voyager is that we don't get to see, literally, Voyager gets home, spoiler, fireworks, cut to credits. That's it. 7 years and you don't get to see the enjoyment. So I think they're going to try and fix some problems from the finales of the other Star Trek shows. And I think they may go back.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah, I think they may go back to Enterprise and redo that finale as well. Yeah, that's my prediction.
Oh, man, that's fun.
How much more meta could you be than to revisit the finales of all of the other shows that you're referencing?
Ooh, I
love it. If they do that, I would love it. Also, I know you've already written it, but hire me and I'll help out. Wow, dogs are excited.
Please stand by for a dog bark break.
Mm-hmm. Hackland party and I wasn't invited?
It's about time you...
Right?
Mariner, this makes us even...
Oh my god, was that Deanna? I love